Listener Production.
This episode touches on the topic of eating disorders and unhealthy eating habits. If you or someone you know needs help, go to butterfly.org.au.
Steph Claire Smith is a dynamic force in the world of health, fitness, and wellness. As a leading model, influencer, and entrepreneur, as one of the founders of Kik, she has captivated audiences worldwide with her authenticity, positivity, and commitment to promoting a balanced lifestyle. In this heartfelt discussion, we discuss her early modeling days, which led her to disordered eating, the pressure of being in the public eye with millions of followers, navigating social media trolls, and the importance of self-love and kindness.
Treat people how you wish to be treated. I do think that when you put out positive vibes and are nice to people, more often than not, you do get it in return.
I'm Sarah Grimberg, and this is A Life of Greatness. Through my years of studying and researching the connection between human behaviour, personal growth, and transformation, I have discovered the keys to unlocking greatness within others. In this podcast, I share stories and experiences from my own teachings, along with conversations with inspiring guests to help you learn the simple tips, habits, practices, and strategies to cultivate an extraordinary existence. Steph Claire Smith is the author of Kicking Goals and You Take Care with her business partner, Laura Henshaw. At its core, this conversation is about using your passion for service and the joy that is felt from that. May this episode shine a light on the limitless capabilities we hold within us and how only we carry the keys to unlocking its power. Steph, thank you for coming on the show. There's so much to talk about, but I wanted to start at the beginning. What made you want to get into modelling? Like, when did you decide, like, this is something that I want to do, or, like, I'm attractive and I think this is what's good for me? Because it's like I ask people who sing and I'm like, well, when was that moment?
When did you notice?
Yeah, it's like, or a comedian, when did you notice you were funny?
Yeah.
And it must be the same thing with you and the industry.
Yeah, in a way. When I was growing up, I was always very confident in front of the camera. Like, anytime Mum had the camera out for family outings or anything, I really wanted to be in all the photos. And I was into singing, dancing, acting, like the whole thing. But as I grew older, I realised that I wasn't exactly that skilled in those other areas, but I was still really wanting to perform in some way. And I loved the idea of almost like putting a mask on and like playing a character, which I suppose actors get to do all the time. But in a way, models do as well a lot of the time, depending on who they're working with. I did a little bit of modelling when I was a kid. So both my brother and I were signed up to a modelling agency as kids. Probably only did like maybe four jobs in a year because you had to get pulled out of school for it, of course. And it was for, you know, Kmart, Target. I did a job for like Barbie Mag and Bertinelliano. And it was just like insane because for me back then it was, you know, they put a bit of lip gloss on you and put your hair in pigtails and you go back to school feeling like on top of the world.
Yes.
But it was really good because it also, I had some pocket money that my parents put aside for me until I was old enough to, you know, have something to spend money on. And that was really good. And from that point, I stopped then throughout high school and just kind of focused on school. But I just had this yearning to get back into it the entire high school. So even towards the end of my high school years, I would study studio arts and I'd be the first person to put my hand up if someone needed like someone in their shots or just to practice like photography with. And so I kind of dabbled in it that way throughout school. And when we were finishing up school and everyone was kind of having this clear idea of what they wanted to do and the direction they wanted to go in, I was never an academic kid. I was always sporty, really into health and fitness. Like the subjects I finished off with were food tech, health, PE, studio arts and English. So I think it like kind of makes a lot of sense as to like where I am today when I kind of put them all together, being creative and in the health space. But I still had this like yearning to really give modelling a real crack. And so I spoke to my parents and they were both really supportive of the idea of me having a gap year just to try it out. But I had to have another job on the side, was like Mum's mum's thing, something a bit more consistent. And then at the end of the year, we'd kind of just discuss like whether or not I wanted to go to TAFE or uni. I had different ideas like being a PE teacher and stuff like that, which, you know, I still think like maybe one day I will go back to and study that and do that because I love kids and love sport.
So what job did you have on the side?
Boost Juice.
Oh, yeah.
I was a Boost gal, but I wasn't a Boost gal for long. I was Baker's Delight between 14 and 18. It was my first job and my longest job, and I loved that job. But, yeah, I worked for Boost for probably 3.5 months because luckily for me, as soon as I finished school and started modelling, I picked up some really regular clients, which that meant that I couldn't actually have a casual job on the side because it was very spontaneous. Like I'd get a call the night before being like, tomorrow you're in Geelong all day. So it was kind of like, okay, I'm either in this or I'm not. And so I just kind of jumped in and was, again, very, very fortunate with that first year, picked up a lot of regular clients and it's kind of just gone from there. And for the longest time, it really was, I was living like my dream. Like I couldn't believe that I was actually having it as a job. The amount of people that judged me in high school for saying that that was something that I aspired to do.
Really?
You know, especially a lot of, to be honest, a lot of teachers basically said it was like a dead end job and that I would need a backup because I wasn't going to be going anywhere in life. Mm. And some of these teachers were, you know, pushing me into academics and stuff that I just like naturally did not gravitate towards nor have any interest in.
Yes.
And so I think for me, there was a little bit of a fire in my belly as well in the start of modelling that I just like really wanted to make it work because so many people had judged me for having that as something that I wanted to do. And I think looking back now, there was some people in the modelling industry who said, you really should have something else on the side. And I don't think it was as a backup, like they had doubt in my success. What I've learned and what I now say to aspiring models or new models is the benefit of having something else on the side is it's got nothing to do with how successful your career might be. It's more so to have your mind on something else.
Yes.
Because when your mind is purely on the way that you look, which is what the modelling industry is, and before you make your own kind of profile, it's not based off of who you are. Mm. It's just purely on your look. So your whole every day, all day is just all about like how do I perfect this version of me, like how do I perfect the way that I look if you don't have anything else. If I was studying on site or had something else, maybe I wouldn't have been so focused on it 24/7 and maybe it would have helped me.
It's interesting, you know, because when I was young, I just wanted to be an actress and I loved acting from when I was four and I, similar to you, like I did subjects that pushed me in that way, like theatre studies and English and literature at school. I was not into maths or science or any of those things. No, thank you. Gave that maths up as soon as I could. I think I was a year 10. Anyway, thank you very much. When I was at National Theatre Drama School, since I was little, they said the same thing. 99% of actors are unemployed. Yeah. You'll need to have another job as well. And I kind of get what they mean because the work isn't as regular as getting a job 100%. In marketing and then you just got a full-time job in marketing. It is like, okay, you can get a job and then that's finished and then you can may not get one for a while, but when you do get the job, you get paid kind of a lot more than the average person on a salary of your age. So it does make sense. But, you know, you brought up something which I think is interesting about the modelling world, which is the truth of it, that it is based on the way that you look. And even when I went to auditions when I was little for like Kmart and stuff like that, I remember getting that ad and it was like, look in front of the camera, look to the side, look to the side. Okay, thanks. I didn't even like say a word.
Oh, yeah.
And they're just fitting a role like girl with dark hair who plays this, whatever. Mm-hmm. I wonder for you, when it's based solely off the way that you look, and even like now, knowing that, and also knowing that when we grow up, looks change, I suppose.
It's uncontrollable, really, most part.
It is. And it's that short-lived thing. Like you can do it for so many years and then there's going to be those younger girls that come in because when you're younger, you're in the height of your youthful look. Yeah. So I wonder like what the pressure was on you for that. Mm. Then, and I suppose even now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I did actually open up about this recently on the Kick Pod because I think what was important for me to kind of work through was I now, in what we do with Kick particularly, I champion for people not to put their appearance as like the most important thing about them, right? But that is something that I've struggled with over the years because for so long in my life it kind of was.
Of course.
So it's really hard to kind of retrain your brain. And I suppose back to your first question, I think the reason why I had interest in the modelling industry was because more often than not, like 9 out of 10 compliments that I got growing up and into my teenage years was on my appearance. Like it wasn't about how smart I was or I could have got, you know, an A in studio class. My parents a bit different, but like I feel like
Of course. Like your parents, like their compliments wear off after like a short time because they're your parents.
100%.
But then people you hear saying to your parents, God, your daughter's so pretty or something like that.
It was always like she's so beautiful and like, and it's like I'm not I don't want to complain about that, but when you hear something and you don't really hear anything else, like how I was actually really good at sports, I was very athletic, really successful and all that stuff, but it was just less, I didn't really hear that as much.
Yeah.
So I think for so long I was like, well, okay, this is my thing then. This is what I have. This is what people, not like about me, but notice about me.
Yeah. And you get attention like that. There's no doubt in saying that you walk into a room and people look at you and you feel good because it's like, they're noticing me, you know, and you get off on that. Mm. You know, that's like an adrenaline in a sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same thing as like, I'm sure professional athletes and stuff like that, they're probably really hard on themselves, but when they hear or when they win something or they hear something that they've done something well, it's like a boost.
You
get like a little confidence boost. Yeah. So for me, it was all attached to the way I looked. So for a really long time, that's been something that I've had to work through and let go of. And I will never get to a point where I don't care about my looks at all. Mm. Like I just won't. But I certainly don't put it up there as the most important thing about me anymore. And I really try and make sure that both internally and externally to everyone else, that I am prioritizing the other things that I actually genuinely love in other people, like how they make people feel, how they treat other people. To me, that's what's important about me and that's what I love and respect about myself. And I think, especially the older I'm getting, and you're so right, you have less control of the way you look, especially through motherhood. I'm just feeling like I'm caring a little less the older I'm getting and it's feeling like lighter and lighter, which I'm loving. And it doesn't mean that I don't love getting dressed up. Yeah. Like I do. I don't think I'll ever be completely detached to caring about how I look. However, it's not the thing that drives me every day. It's not the thing that I'm obsessing over 24/7. It was the thing that I was obsessing over 24/7 for a good period of my 20s, my early 20s and late teens, but I'm so done with that.
Absolutely. How old are you now?
I'm 29.
29.
I'm 30 in a couple months.
I mean, I know a lot of people do get things done to themselves cosmetically at a young age, different to what it was a while ago. But obviously
so
then,
isn't it?
I mean, when I was that age, I didn't even know about that kind of stuff.
No, I only heard about it in like, even early 20s, I would only hear about things like, even Botox, like it was only celebrities.
Yeah.
That's all I've heard about.
You just would never even think about it.
Yeah.
And then that obviously changes as you get older. Your skin isn't as elastic as what it was. Yeah. So I wonder for you, I know it's hard to tell now because you're not there, but with cosmetic surgery and things like that, what are your thoughts on that? Like, you know, I was recently away in Dubai and it was really interesting. Like, I was the only one around the pool. There was a lot of, like, other international people there that had not had plastic surgery. And I have nothing against it whatsoever. Mm. And I actually felt like the odd one out because everyone else had enhancements in some way to their body, to their face. And I thought, God, it's like, I feel weird that I'm not, you know, because everyone's in their bathers. Mm. I didn't know these people, by the way. I actually felt weird because I understand now if that is your group of people and you're seeing that the whole time, no wonder you would then want to go follow and do a similar thing. So I'd love to know what your thoughts on that are.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me it's really, because I, you know, obviously I've got a lot of girlfriends who I'm really close with and who we've all go through these different thoughts and insecurities in our bodies or in our skin and everything and have these thoughts, especially as, you know, we're getting like 30 now but it is becoming like more normalized, which I can strongly say I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with the fact that there's people that I know that are like 19 talking about Botox.
I know.
I think that makes me feel a little uncomfortable. But I think at the end of the day, as long as you are informed and it is purely just for you and for nobody else, I think people should feel empowered to do whatever they want. But I am not here for encouraging others to do that, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Like, I think it needs to be solely their decision based off of what no one else has like said or encouraged them to do. And I just don't think it needs to be championed because I don't love the fact that it's becoming the norm, especially for young women, because it's drilling into us that what we are naturally is not okay. Mm. And I've definitely battled with that thought like over the years, 100% is like not appreciating my natural self, who I am.
Yeah.
But yeah, things like that is just affirming that for me, which is really sad. So I would never judge someone for doing anything, not at all. It's totally fine, but it's more just the way that it's being portrayed now, especially with social media and how accessible it is and everything. That's what I'm worried about because I'm worried that it is becoming like the norm. And as you said,
yeah,
you're like the odd one out if you haven't.
Do you think about that for yourself?
I mean, like the fear of aging and stuff.
Well, like thinking that if the time comes, like I'm happy to, yeah.
I think I'll just make that decision for myself when I do. But I mean, I think for me, I have this battle of like, you know, falling down the same trap as everyone else and like not loving like wrinkles or like anything to do with aging and in yourself. Like it's like you never notice it in other people.
Yes.
Right? But you're the first to notice it in yourself. But then I hear so much online now people saying, you know, what about the fact that you are lucky to get to an age where you actually show that you're aging? Like plenty of people, unfortunately, pass well before that. It's life. Someone said it was like, it's not aging, it's living.
Mm.
And
I love that.
You know, so I think anytime that I'm feeling that way, I try and remind myself of that. Does that mean that I, you know, won't ever get work? I have no idea. It really will probably come down to how I'm feeling and where my self-confidence is at. But I really hope that I can continue to kind of like feel good enough in myself and just come back to the truth of which is just really any insecurity I'm feeling deeply has been learned. I wasn't born hating wrinkles like or anything like that. I wasn't born thinking that like older people looked old and that was, you know, because of society, something to be upset about.
Mm.
Something to be celebrated. I hope to be able to stick to that.
When you had left school, you ended up going to America to do modelling.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about that journey and what happened there?
Yeah, so it was 2014. I'd been modelling in Australia for 3 years and was having a really great time and having a great successful career. But I think there's this thing, if you're going into full-time modelling, particularly in Australia, there's almost like a bit of a ceiling of success, and to get past it, you have to go overseas and have success over there.
It's
and
then like that. It's like a badge. In most areas.
Yeah, it's the like same with acting. 100%.
Yeah.
So that was really the reason I wanted to go over. I was also at an age where I was like kind of ready to move out of home because I was still living at home at that point and just try something new. So I went over, had a couple of friends over there, but not too many. Made more friends, I would say, while I was there. I started in LA. I only spent a couple of months there because I didn't love it. I don't know, I don't gel well with LA. I don't know what it is about it, but I just
That's funny because I would have thought from a, I mean, I know this is quite a few years ago, but I would have thought from like a fitness, wellness perspective.
But there's things I liked about it. Absolutely, elements that I loved about it. But I just didn't love the people there. I didn't love the whole, you know, you got to know somebody to get somewhere. And that whole aspect of it I didn't love. And also I didn't feel safe getting around there unless I was like in an Uber, which was also expensive and just annoying. I was pretty keen to get to New York. And New York for me, it's interesting because I'm not a city girl at all. Like country girl at heart. I love going to the country and like being out in fresh air. Not a city girl. But there was something about that city that I loved. And I think also knowing that I wasn't going to be there forever. I was like a short period stint. I really just enjoyed and embraced it. But I lived in a studio apartment by myself. Whereas when I was in LA, I had some roommates in a model apartment. That was probably the worst thing I could have done, was be that isolated. I was really excited at first because I was like, this is the first time I'm living by myself. Feel super empowered. What an adult I am. I was 20. But I met my agency over there, you know, pretty much after being there for a day. And when they'd signed me, it was a year earlier. And it was when I had kind of gone over there for a quick trip just to meet with agencies. And in that year, I was a bit of a late bloomer with my body, I would say. And in that year, I had grown up a little bit, I would say. And I wasn't insecure about it.
Yeah.
And I was never made to feel that way in Australia either. But It started a little bit in LA, but because I wasn't going to be there long, I like almost didn't let it bother me. But also, it was so much more commercial in LA, and the castings and stuff that they were sending me to, it wasn't that kind of like high editorial or anything like that. So the pressure was a little bit lower. But I went to my agency. One of the first things they said is like, "Oh, you've gained weight." And I was like, "Oh, have I? Cool. Okay."
They just said that to you straight off the bat.
Yeah, straight off the bat. Mm. Did all my measurements, kind of like whispering to each other as they would do them. Such an intimidating thing, getting yourself measured in front of people, may I add. And then basically they said, "Okay, so like, when do you think you'll be able to get back to basically the size that they signed me at?" And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I'm sure I can do something." Then one of them started reeling off all of these tips that they'd shared, or like these other girls in the agency, like models, would follow, none of which at all would ever be said by a dietitian or anyone in the health space, because they are so unhealthy. So definitely a trigger warning. The stuff I'm going to share is so unhealthy. Do not do it. But, you know, like, take up smoking because it suppresses your hunger. Not only that, but a lot of the directors and people at photo shoots smoke. So if you want to
really
get close
for,
with
that's
them.
That's good for your skin long term
no,
as well.
I know, right?
Like, really good for wrinkles and making and the elasticity in your skin, or, you know.
But it was because...
That's so weird.
I know, not just because of curbing hunger, but it was also because of the social aspect of, like, knowing people and getting further that way. So if they were taking a smoking break, you would go out with them and be able to go out and stand out there with them.
Yeah.
Not just like randomly without a cigarette in your hand, right? So that was one thing, and yeah. I was like, no, nah, I was
won't
never interested in getting
lung cancer and no, emphysema.
100%.
Yes.
Then things like snack on apples because they're like lower in calorie or something, but higher in sugar and fiber, so they'll make you feel fuller and energized. But that's probably the only fruit that they'd allow, and also not to have too much of it. And then a lot of the girls would have, like, you know, your Diet Cokes or Coke Zeros for energy. But basically it was like, eat as less as you can and just find little things that give you the energy to get you through. And then with my training, they said, "Do you do a lot of strength training?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, I like strength training." And they were like, "Well, you put on muscle too easily and that's adding to your measurements. So you need to stop," basically. They told me to pick up hot yoga, walking long distancing, not even running anymore because I was going to build too much muscle.
Like, absurd.
It was crazy. And, like, none of them had expertise to be sharing any of this. But I was so excited to be there, and I was so ready, I think, for, like, the challenge. And I wanted to be successful over there, and I just knew I had to do whatever they said to do it. So I tried it. I was getting measured twice a week, which is just barbaric because, I mean, your body fluctuates within
twice
a day anyway.
A week?
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And the worst part was, I'm laughing now, but it was horrible. But, like, even if I had my period or it was the week before my period when I would, like, hold a little bit more water or anything like that, I would be so anxious about going in because I'd be like, they're going to think I've gone backwards because I might be bigger than, like, last week or whatever. So that was really horrible. And so my days there became all about moving my body and eating, like, the most pure, absolutely nothing processed, and just being really obsessive with everything that entered my mouth. That was pretty much it. I did some test shoots. They stopped taking me to castings because they didn't think that I was, like, worthy of their agency, like, being represented by their agency. So I was, like, driven to get back on their board, basically. And they had also sponsored my visa. So it was like, it's got to work out. Otherwise I'm going home. So for a long period of time, the only work I was getting was every, like, 2 months, there was an Australian job. I was actually working with Dottie at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I was a full ambassador role. So they'd fly me back every 2 months for, like, 4 days. And that was kind of, like, paying the bills, really. And then there was, like, the odd job, actually, from clients that I met when I was in LA that were a bit more commercial that I did a couple of times over there. But other than that, it was test shoots. So all free just to be doing something, basically, and have stuff in my portfolio. But... yeah, even some of those test shoots were, like, really questionable with, like, who... anyway, that's just the overseas modelling life.
But what if in that diet of eating nothing, surely you lost weight. Did they accept you then?
Well, it's interesting because I became so obsessed... So I've always loved food.
Yeah.
I've always had a really great relationship... Well, I haven't always had a really great... Growing up, I had a really great relationship with it. My parents never spoke about dieting or anything around me, and Dad always really promoted balance and just being active. Mm. So I never really felt like I had to be restrictive, and so I loved it. So the idea of restricting myself completely and doing exactly what they said, which was basically an apple and a Diet Coke a day, I wasn't interested in. But instead, I did my own, like, due diligence on what's healthy, and there was so many mixed messages online. So I'd try things like that, what they said, but I realised that that wasn't going to last long for me because I just loved food too much. So then what I did was I started demonising certain food groups that I'd heard were bad, like carbs, sugar, even from fruit. Tried to reduce my dairy intake, even though I'm a huge cheese lover. But I became so obsessed with that, and also like everything organic and absolutely nothing from a packet. I became so obsessed with it that I felt I ended up having, like, you know, these huge dinner plates, especially towards the end of the day, because I might not eat much in the actual day. But then at the end of the day, I was like home alone in my studio apartment. No one could be there to see what I was eating. And I'd cook enough for me to have, you know, dinner and then dinner and lunch the next day. But I'd end up consuming it all in that night because I was trying to ignore all of these other cravings that I was having of foods that I'd always loved and been fine with. I honestly would like make up almost intolerances in my mind just to like make sure that I had an excuse to be able to avoid some of these things. And because of that, I would then overeat. I'd make myself feel sick. And what I ended up doing most nights, which is like, it's really horrible to kind of like think back to this point, but I'd make myself so sick that I would end up being sick or like forcing myself to be sick. And then I just sit in like this depressed, just I felt worthless. I felt like, what's wrong with you? Why do you keep doing this? You're going to wake up the next day. Please do better. And then the next day I'd just be like, you're not going to do better today. And it would just happen again and again and again. So that was a really unhealthy cycle. And it took me a while to be able to like look at food again in not, it was never really calorie counting. It was more just like demonizing food groups and being obsessed with it and then just overeating and overindulging because I was trying to curb these things that I'd like said were bad in my own head by eating more of the good stuff and then just overdoing it and being sick from it. So that was really hard to work through, but I realized it kind of got to a point where I was like getting changed like 20 times a day before leaving the house, trying to find something that I looked the skinniest in. I lost a lot of energy. I lost a lot of confidence. I just wasn't my kind of bubbly self. Yeah, when I had kind of connected with some people, including my Australian agent, who's still my manager to this day, he's such a legend, he could kind of see that in me, that I wasn't really myself anymore. And
so the spark has dimmed.
And he was like, you don't need to be doing this. Like, especially when you come home, everyone loved you for you. You don't need, wouldn't ever expect you to do that or change in any way. And so I think he gave me the confidence, you know, he said he'd help me like work through obviously being like signed with them and having my visa through them. So he did and he helped me through that. And I ended up signing with a different agency right towards the end of my trip who were pretty open. And I was really open in the start with, like, I was like, I'm ready to go home pretty soon. And I'm pretty happy working at home. Like, it's not like I escaped Australia because I wasn't working or I hated working here and I wanted to work overseas. So I only want to sign with you if I'm not going to get this same treatment, basically. And they were like, we wouldn't do that. As in, we're happy to sign you as you are. We don't think you need to change or anything like that. So I signed with them, but I was probably only with them for a month and I was ready to go home just because I was homesick and wanted to be surrounded by friends and family again. But then, yeah, it wasn't like I came home and everything was back to normal. Like,
I think once you have an eating disorder, it actually always stays with you in the back of your head. Yeah. You can do all the treatment on it, but it can trigger when you least expect it. It might even be years later.
Yeah.
It can just be one thing. It's like someone who's been out in, you know, an abused alcohol or things like, or drugs, like, doesn't go away completely. It's always lies dormant.
100%. Yeah. And I mean, I was never diagnosed, but I think when I went, since speaking to some people since and like reflecting on the habits that I had and everything, there was definitely elements of disordered eating in there. But I think the person that I did speak to and I did reach out to probably first and was really honest about what was going on was a trainer. A personal trainer friend of mine. I knew that he'd trained some girls before who had had eating disorders and stuff like that and kind of helped them through it. And I think for me, talking to him about it was just, it was because it wasn't like one of my closest loved ones who would just, you know, be a shoulder and not necessarily be able to relate but would want the support in the world. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely, I'm not taking anything away from that, but I think there's something different in speaking to someone who's a little bit removed from, it's almost like when you go to a therapist, like they have no bias. They're just, it was kind of like that for me. because he wasn't even like my regular trainer or anything like that. I trained with him a couple of times.
Yeah.
But he was really helpful because it's almost like he kind of kept me accountable. He would just check in with me and I was able to be honest with him. And I just felt like my dirty little secret was out,
yes,
in a way. And that helped me kind of recognize it. And then when I could feel things happening again, I would either just message him or I'd be reminded I'm going to have to tell him about this. And I know that sounds weird, but in a way, it really helped me.
It's really like a psychologist.
Yeah, yeah, kind of.
Did you tell your parents? Because that would have upset them.
Yeah, totally. And I think one of the hardest things to reflect on now is for a period of time, especially because I was still living at home, because some of these habits had started right before my trip that I just learnt of, like, how to eat healthy online. So when I was still living at home, it had started. And then when I came home, I was still kind of attached to it, even though I was working through it. And I, for a period of time, like, would be angry at mum for using, like, certain ingredients or, like, using olive oil and stuff, you know. And I feel sad reflecting on it because I remember even, like, years after I learnt, like, what I was doing was wrong, I'd go over for dinner and the things mum would, you know, offer me or suggest, because they're the changes like I would make her do when I was at home, I'd be like, oh, you, like, don't have to do that anymore. Like, I'm happy to eat olive oil. I'm happy to have olive oil. Like, things like that. Or even...
And they're just trying to make you happy.
Yeah, right? Mm. And this is really silly, but, like, every year from my earliest childhood memories, I would get this bag of gold coins, chocolates in the morning, on Christmas morning. Everyone, like, you know, those gold chocolate coins, love them. Anyway, every morning they were in my Saddlesack every year. And when I was going through this period, like, because I was totally demonizing it, mum would put, like, because I basically told her I wouldn't eat it, like 90% dark lint chocolate. Because that's all I'd allow myself. Mm. And I remember for a couple of years it was that. And I didn't say anything because that's kind of like what I'd expected because that's what I was eating. But then I remember when I'd worked through it and I got dark chocolate again, I got really sad because I was like, I'd really love those gold coins now. You know, like, yes, I don't care anymore. And, like, that's such, like, a fond memory for me. Now it's back to gold coins. I still get a Saddlesack from mum, God love her. But, yeah, I remember being like, oh, this is really sad because I remembered that for the period when Josh and I first started dating, I would avoid having dinner at his family's house because I couldn't control what they were eating or, you know, if it was going to be like a big carbonara dish, which is honestly one of my favourite dinners and I love it. But back then, absolutely not. There's no way I would eat it. I would make some excuse up to, and I feel like his mum knew.
Yeah, you know, they're just trying to help, like, because they just want you to come for dinner.
Yeah, and
it's exhausting for you as well.
And it was hard because then I also reflect back on that time and I remember Josh's little sister who's like, she is technically my little sister now, Bailey. I love her to bits. And I mean, we've always been the closest. That's how we initially met. I met Bailey first. And I remember for a period of time, I think she was watching me when I wasn't in that great period. And I was her role model. Like, I was like her older sister. And I remember hearing that she was getting quite restrictive with the foods that she was taking to school. And that killed me. Because it just made me realise that, like, what I was, like, putting out there, like, even though I thought it was just for, like, myself, she was obviously picking up on it. And it just, like, yeah, reflecting on that time's really hard. But, yeah, no, I didn't necessarily ever, like, sit mum and dad down and be like, this is what I'm going through. But I think throughout the years I've had little chats with mum and she's, you know, a big fan of everything that we do. So through that she's obviously learnt more detail, I think. And, of course, she's, like, sad to hear about it, but she's always been, like, incredibly supportive, and I have her to thank that it didn't happen earlier, I would say, because I think I was 21 years old the first time I heard her talk about her insecurities in her body, and I know, you know, a lot of my friends from school, they grew up with their mums on every fad diet under the sun, picking apart their bodies quite openly, and that was their norm. Mm. And that's what they grew up with, knowing, like, this is how I need to talk to my body. So for me, I was lucky enough that at least in my home space that wasn't the case. And I want to be that way as well as a mum now and portray that, you know. So I have her to thank for a lot of the base relationship, I think, with how I was able to probably get back maybe quicker than some other people because I'd had this, I could, like, reflect on a time where it was really good. Not everyone can do that. So, yeah.
obviously with Kick, your app that promotes so much health and wellness and strength and exercise and just all the things that nourish your body. Mm. Do you think like you've gone the opposite way?
Yeah,
and it's like, you know, now I have the ability to empower people. You had the intelligence then, but you have a lot more knowledge now because you're older.
Yeah.
That happens with life experience that you're now doing the opposite.
Yeah.
In a good way, you know?
Yeah. Well, because I think at the end of the day, fueling yourself with good food and moving your body, it's very important. So I think when I was working through that relationship for myself and connecting with our community, which was already big at the time, I think in 2014 or 15, I already had 500,000 followers. So there was enough people to connect with for me to realize that this was, and I opened up about it online, and gosh, the DMs that would flood in about that experience, people being able to relate, was overwhelming. But for me, all it did was be like, okay, something needs to change. You know, there needs to be something in between all the BS that's out there that kind of just takes health and wellness back to basics and allows people the flexibility to define it for themselves. You know, like, it's not a strict plan. It needs to fit into your own lifestyle for it to be sustainable. And you need to find movement that you enjoy. You need to find food that you enjoy.
Yes.
It isn't just good for you, but you actually enjoy. Otherwise, you're not going to sustain those habits. You know, I had someone message me the other day, and sadly, they were still fueled by various aesthetic goals that they had. However, the things that they were saying was like, I just hate salads. I can't, no matter what I can do, I cannot like salads. I'm like, that's fine. You don't have to eat salads.
Exactly. Like, there's no rule that says you must eat salads.
Yeah. So things like that, like just reshaping that so that people can kind of define it by themselves. Of course, with the assistance of the experts that we have that are putting all the information out there, that's totally important where you're getting your information from. But at the end of the day, how many days a week you work out, how many minutes it is per day, and what that exercise is really is up to the individual with what works for them, what makes them feel good.
Yes.
And it's the same with the food that they eat as well. Not everyone can work under the same diet. That's why, that's not why there's so many. There's so many because it makes a lot of people money. But I think it's just at the end of the day, there's a reason why everyone has such different paths with their,
And I wonder, you bring up social media, which has obviously been a pertinent part of your career and growth. And I mean, I really love social media. My following's not as big as yours, but I still nurture it and love it and love the community. Yeah. And yes, I see the negatives in social media, but at the same time, there's so many beautiful communities that can be formed with it as well that I just think are incredible. It's a great way of getting messages across. And I wonder for you, how have you worked with social media in the with the positives and the negatives within your profile and your business?
Mm. So I agree. I think that whilst there's a lot of crap out there on there, it's definitely, I mean, it's the whole reason we were able to launch Kick in the first place and connect with so many so instantly and continue to do so. You know, we can pop out a question box or a survey and learn more about people within an hour. So it's very powerful and it can do so much good. And really, depending on who, as an individual, who you're following is really how negative or positive a space it can be.
Yes.
So for me, when I was working through this, I realized there was a lot of accounts that I was following that were encouraging me down the wrong paths, or even like individual accounts like models, for example. I had to unfollow some of them for a period of time. I've been able to refollow them now because I don't have that same pressure on myself when I now look at them or admire them in a different way to how I once did. I once looked at them obsessively and like needed to know exactly what they were eating or what they were doing or just like I compared my body to theirs like every day. So when I was in that period, I had to unfollow a lot of people, and I think that's okay. I think everyone should really feel empowered to make their social media a safe space for them. And if you're worried about someone saying that you've unfollowed them, just mute them or something.
Yeah, exactly.
But
muting, I think, is good.
It's really healthy to like check who you're following and who you're not following like all the time. I follow new people all the time. I unfollow people all the time. I think it's just like at any given time you're inspired by different things, and I think when you realize that you're scrolling and you're not feeling good, then you're probably not following the right accounts. You also might be doing it too often and too long. But but we're not going to stay off social media. Like, that's not realistic. So just at least make it a more positive space. For me personally, as in how I appear, like how I am on there, I think I'm really lucky in that my lucky and unlucky, I'll say that, but lucky that my brand and my community was built off me just being me.
Yes.
Really. Like, I didn't start with a niche. I honestly just shared my life, which meant that I would share when I was traveling, I'd share photos of my dog, I'd share photos of my food if I was at a cafe. These are my friends from high school. This is me, like, walking on a catwalk. Like, it was all very polarizing.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just my life. But I'm really grateful that that was kind of my base, because it's allowed me to have such a broad group of people of who I do talk to. And it's meant that I've got flexibility with what I do share now. However, like, it's also meant that I have a whole bunch of people following me probably from my modeling days that I'd, you know, as you said before, like, you nurture your community, and that's amazing, because it really doesn't matter if it's 5,000 or if it's 5 million. You're more likely to be more connected with your community if it's a lower number, right? There's a whole bunch of my followers who, like, I can't, like, connect with and talk about, like,
it must be a lot of sleazy guys.
Absolutely.
As well, look at
it's been really it's been really nice, to be honest, over the last couple of years since my content has shifted more to I suppose like helping women.
Yes.
That I've definitely got way more women following me now, which is not, I would rather that any day. So that's nice. I feel like I'm getting to a point where I can continue to just be me and focus less about who's following me or the number that's following me, and just ensure that the content that I'm putting out there is connecting with people.
Because
it's something that I enjoy.
Rather that the community commented and got something out of, like, a piece that you wrote or something, then you have a lot of followers and none of them are, like, doing
engaging
anything.
With anything. Yeah, 100%. 100%. And, I think for me, I go through ebb and flow with how I feel about social media. Sometimes I'm like, it's just a bit, like, it's more than a bit of fun. Yeah. It's obviously a huge part of my career, but it's a bit of fun, and, like, I can still just look at it lightheartedly and, like, not care too much about what I'm posting. And then other times I'm really uninspired with posting, and it might just be because I'm going through something and I, you know, feel like until I've gone through it or filtered through some stuff myself, I can't talk about it. And then I can't put anything else out there while I'm going through that. So it's interesting being your own personal brand online. Very different to obviously, like, how we would treat Kix page, for example, being a brand.
Of course.
It's a little bit more planned, and which is fine. It's a lot more of, like, an educational
and more
platform.
Business kind of. Yeah. I wonder, you obviously have little Harvey, your son.
Yeah.
I wonder what your thoughts are. I mean, you obviously post about him. I don't post pictures of my kids, and I don't find it either way right or wrong. But I wonder for you, what was the thought process in posting him? Do you ever get worried, like, you know, now there are, you know, the AI things that take images and this and that, and what are your thoughts on that? Like, have you had to really think about it, or you don't worry about it too much?
It's really hard because, and I suppose this goes back to the negative side of me sharing my life and being known for sharing my life, is then I feel like Harvey's a huge part of my life now, like, huge part. Outside of Kick, I spend most of my time with him.
How old is he now?
He's 2.5.
Yeah.
However, the older he's getting, that thought is coming more and more into my mind because he's becoming more aware of the phone. He's also becoming his own little person. So I have started to slow down with it a little bit just to be a little bit more conscious of that. And who knows, you know, who knows if I end up, like, not sharing him at all when it gets to a certain point. I don't know yet. But currently what Josh and I feel comfortable with is not absolutely parading him to the nth degree.
Yes.
But he's still within my content. And I'm trying to find ways that I can still speak to the mums in my community and speak through my experience of parenthood without necessarily always including him.
Yeah.
And we're always really cautious of, like, where we are, sharing anything about our location.
Yeah.
That's always, like, I'm very paranoid about that side of it, absolutely.
So what do you do, post after or something? Yeah.
Always post after. Try not to post anything that's got, like, a really recognisable, if it's somewhere I go regularly, like, obviously if I went to Sydney and we got a photo in front of the Sydney Harbour Bridge. But, like, you know, try and not, you know, make it out like someone could recognise where this area is and all that sort of stuff. Very careful about that side of it, absolutely.
Has anything ever happened? Have you ever had anything that you've been worried about?
Yeah, I have. I mean, and since we've got, like, our house is honestly like Fort Knox. Like, we've got so much security. It's insane.
But your house was online.
Yes, and it was from that point. So when our house went online, which was the most uncomfortable thing ever, like, we spoke to them before it happened and basically begged them not to, and they didn't care. So that's just, you know, some media, but that's okay. What happened from there was I got a DM from someone that mentioned something, like they said something else, but it mentioned something about a tennis ball in my front yard. And I looked out the window and there was a tennis ball in my front yard. And that freaked me out because I had no idea who this person was. So that, I was really anxious for a period of time with that. So very, very careful with our location wise, but it's just really hard when you've got a platform and you're a public figure in a way. It's like, I don't really know how to avoid it.
Yes.
You know, I think it's just one of the shit end of the sticks that comes with it. So it's just managing it.
Because that is a big deal. Like, do you call the police or something? I mean, they can't do anything because they're, you know, the guy's only saying you've got a ball in your, you know, they're not. But it is obviously such a creepy kind of feeling. Mm. I wonder for you, obviously, you know, you're in the media, you get attention. A lot is good, but then a lot can be that Daily Mail kind of stuff. Do you get upset about that, or is it something that you put to the side? Do you read articles that write things that aren't so kind about you?
I mean, I have a Google alert on, so I do read a lot of them. You know, we always make sure that, like, things like kick and everything is credited correctly and all that sort of stuff. So it's not, you know, if it was at a point where it was really bothering me mentally, I would absolutely turn that off. But it hasn't ever got to that point. And I think with things like the Daily Mail, I have a really funny relationship with them, or what I think about them, because I mean sometimes it's honestly just they talk about something that I've posted and it's literally just outlining the detail of what I'm wearing or how my hair looks. I'm like, who's reading this?
As
if this is newsworthy.
Steph got blow wave today. Her hair is looking lovely.
That stuff, I'm like, whatever. I did a shoot recently, a big campaign that I'm really excited about coming out, but these paparazzi turned up and it really bothered me because instantly I was distracted. You know, I suddenly, instead of having one camera to focus on, there was two guys that were working together on either end and they were working for the Daily Mail.
How did they know about it?
It was in Bondi. So that, like, any time I shoot in Bondi or Sydney, paparazzi are called. It's like they have people going around with just like looking out for things. Anyway, so they were there and I actually ended up riding over to one of them because one of the shots, I'm on a bike and I rode over. And I was like, can you please stop taking a photo? Because at this point he's like holding he's had a camera around his neck, but he was holding his phone up. And he just kind of like kept filming and like just looked aside of his phone and said, oh, I'm a photographer. I was like, I really don't care. Can you please stop taking photos? It's making me feel uncomfortable. And he was like, well, you're in a public place, so I'm allowed to take photos of you. So maybe shoot somewhere else. And he just looked at me and I was like, okay. Enjoy your day. And then I rode off and they were there for another like hour or two.
Are they allowed to post photos of Harvey? Or do they have to blur his face out?
I think they are technically allowed to.
Wow.
Yeah, because I think they are, because I've seen plenty of articles of celebrities who deliberately don't put their children online.
Yeah.
And then the media take photos of them like getting in and out of the car.
There's a rule around that, but maybe there isn't.
Like, I don't know. I've certainly seen it online. I don't think Harvey's ever been papped or anything. But, so it's just like things like that, definitely uncomfortable. But it's kind of just that comes with it.
And the trolls that you just, you know, kind of...
I'm pretty good now.
What's your mindset around kind of trying to detach from taking their opinions on and thinking it's one you should care about?
Yeah. I think for me it really depends on what matters to me most. So if someone's trolling me about something I've worn or what I look like, or, you know, I don't know, it just has a disagreement, doesn't really bother me. However, if I've done something or I'm standing up for something and someone, or like even if it's something with Kick, for example, because that's something I champion obviously the most, if someone has something negative to say about what we do at Kick, I take that to heart because I'm like, all we're trying to do is like do good and help people. And so I can't help but like read into whatever they have to say. And sometimes it's like they obviously don't know anything about what we do and they're just looking from the outside in. And so I can get past that. But when they're just kind of like picking apart, that can, especially if I'm having a day where, because everyone has those days where you're a little bit fragile, that's when it can affect me. But more often than not, I will just not respond and I'll just block and delete. Yeah. I'm pretty good at doing that now. For too long, I would put the effort into trying to change their mind.
Yes.
More often than not, they don't want their minds changed and you just end up feeling worse and worse as the conversation went and you realised these people were just never going to be on the same page and that's okay. So I think as I've gotten older, I've been completely okay with the fact that not everyone's going to like you, not everyone's going to like everything that you do, and that's okay because you're not out there to please everyone else. And for every, you know, negative DM, there's like 100 good ones that really appreciate you for whatever you're speaking up about. So just try not to focus on the negative.
Steph, what's the best advice that you have ever been given?
My mum's always said to me, which I try and do as much as I can because it's something that I think I've also struggled with at times when it comes to like my closest loved one being my partner, Josh, but to treat people how you wish to be treated. And I'll go back to what I was saying before, because for me, something that I've really struggled with is in work and in life in general, when I'm highly strung or stressed or overwhelmed, I tend to switch into performance mode and pretend everything's okay to, you know, maybe it's our staff, maybe it's people I'm working for. But then when I go home, it's almost like my safe space. I can just release.
Yeah.
And that means that sometimes I'm not necessarily patient. I'm not necessarily treating Josh, you know, and I've worked on this a lot, but upon reflection, I haven't always been like the nicest person, but it's really only in those like highly strong times of overwhelm. And we've learned ways to highly communicate through those times. And he's incredible and super supportive of me, but that is something that I've wanted to work through. So that old thing that my mum used to always say is like, treat people how you wish to be treated, is something that I try and drill into myself, because I do think that when you put out positive vibes and are nice to people, more often than not, you do get it in return.
100%.
So that's something that I try and,
do you have a favourite saying or prayer or mantra?
I love Dr. Seuss.
Yeah.
And I love a lot of those quotes, but one being, be who you are and say what you feel because those who matter don't mind and those who mind don't matter, or the other way around. But basically, do what you want. The people that love you and appreciate you for it won't mind, and the ones that do, they don't need to be for you. It's like, I love that.
Yeah.
Because I think it goes back to just being yourself and being okay with the fact that not everyone's going to like you, which is hard when you've got a...
Yes, but it's true. You can be the nicest person in the world and not everyone's going to like you.
There's people who hate Taylor Swift, so...
Yeah, exactly. Damn them. And our final question, what is a life of greatness to you?
Finding content, I think, and just being... Just feeling content, understanding that you're not going to be happy every day, you're not going to win everything, you're not going to please everyone, but just feeling okay with who you are and content with the direction that your life is going is like peace and greatness to me.
Thank you so much, Steph, for opening up. I really appreciate it. Thank you for the beautiful conversation today.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode, then I'd love you to join my community on Instagram at Sarah Grimberg, where we post videos and behind-the-scenes footage of each recording. You can also join my private Facebook group, Live Your Life Greatly, where we discuss the content in this episode and many more, as well as give advice and tips on how to live a life of love and meaning. To purchase my manifestation course and meditations, head to the shop tab at saragrimberg.com or this week's episode show notes to find a link. If you love what you heard, we'd love you to hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or your favourite podcast app and leave a 5-star review. It will help us share this wisdom with others.